Hello, friends. Welcome to What Time Was I Born? An astrology podcast where I interview people through the lens of their birth chart. My name is Nadine, and I'm an astrologer based in New York City. You can find me on Instagram at NadineJane_astrology or on my website, www.NadineJaneAstrology.com. And yes, you can book a birth chart reading with me there. Hello, friends. On today's episode of What Time Was I Born, I'm going to be speaking to Camilla Marcus. In case you've never heard of her before, she is the founder and CEO of this fucking amazing cafe. And I believe the West Village, maybe Soho, and it's called Westbourne. It's super progressive. It's vegan, which I know is all hip right now, but it's really good vegan food. I believe it's almost or already is zero waste. And which is a big deal for New York City. And she has many big plans to expand the concept of Westbourne, which is to come. So the biggest overarching theme of today's episode is what does the chart of a CEO look like? But beyond that, we're going to talk about the fact that she just became a mom to a beautiful baby Libra. We're going to talk about her relationship with her family of origin and maybe even the part of her personality that she calls the good witch. So if you're interested in the nitty gritty of her chart, she is a Capricorn rising. She has her sun, her Mercury and Venus all in Aries in the fourth house. She has her Mars in Taurus in the fifth house. She has her moon in Leo in the eighth house. And then she has her Saturn in Scorpio in the 11th. And she has Jupiter in Aquarius in the second house. So hi, Camilla.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Good morning.
So we're in your home in, is this the West Village technically?
Greenwich Village technically, but we're kind of in the middle of a bunch of different neighborhoods.
Yeah. It's a rainy day in New York City.
What's new?
So tell us a little bit about yourself, because obviously I know you, but for anyone who has never heard of you before.
Sure. So I am the owner of Westbourne, which is an all-day cafe in Soho, mission-driven and vegetable-forward, hopefully going to be the first zero-waste restaurant in Manhattan. I'm born and raised in Los Angeles, youngest of three children, mm-hmm. Have a pretty kind of crazy diverse background.
Yeah.
Cooking,
should we say how we
law,
met?
Business.
Yeah.
And then we met. When I tell people this story, though, I was like, really? Like, I know. Well, I feel like making adult friends sort of out in the world is unusual.
Oh,
and
my
rare
God. Absolutely. Yeah.
We met when I was forming a hospitality tech conference, which just had its fifth year. How
oh my
weird
God,
is
that's
that?
So crazy.
So it's held every fall here in New York. And Nadine created the identity and all the collateral and all the imagery, all the logos.
It feels like
I remember the day
ago.
I met you and I was like, oh, we're going to be friends. I was like, I whatever happens, whether this turns out as a good engagement
yes,
or not.
Yes, exactly. Whether we work together or not. I remember though being like, she has to be from California. You know what I mean? Like you just had some type of like brightness I hadn't seen in a while. I'd only been living in New York, I think, for a year and a half or something like that. And I remember the way that you would smile at me. There was some sort of recognition where I was like, she's had to have lived in California or been born in California, raised in California to some degree.
I get that a lot. And I feel like it's the nicest compliment ever. I feel like my deep fear is someone telling me I seem like a New Yorker.
Yeah.
I just had a baby and both my husband and I keep saying like, it's so weird he's a New Yorker. Like I never thought, you know.
Yes.
You just, my heart's in both places. I would say, I wish I could have my days in LA and my nights in New York. But
what I noticed, how long have you lived in New York for? A long time.
Yeah, I guess almost 15 years now, on and off.
So you haven't lost that California charm, I guess is what I mean. You know, we all get a little bit jaded. We all turn into a little bit of a different version of ourselves when we move here. I obviously didn't know you before, but that was the gist that I got.
Well, if 6 years, I still got it. I think that's a good, that's a good tip.
Yes. So before we get into it, what is your relationship with astrology up till now?
Obsessed. Always have been. I think it's funny because I remember when we first met and you started to sort of unravel my chart before a formal reading.
Yeah.
I just always felt like I really was Aries and it just all, when I would read, you know, casual readings and what have you, it just resonated so strongly. And I also think being female and having that personality type is a little socially atypical. And so I always found astrology for me really helpful sort of to say like, okay, it's meant to be it's a positive, mm-hmm. you know, things like that where, you know, I think out in the world, a lot of the signals are kind of negative towards that personality yeah. type, especially if you're female.
Yes.
But I'm also from California. So, you know, we're yeah. we're woo-woo all the way through.
Oh, totally.
And I believe in that stuff. All yeah. my friends, my closest friends for the most part, cluster around very certain signs too, mm-hmm. which I find really what interesting. Capricorn, all my male friends and my husband are Capricorn. Yes. A lot of my female friends are Virgo, which my dad is. Mm. And I have a very funny relationship with, I'm very close to both my parents in very different ways.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that a lot of my girlfriends have my dad's sign. Mm. Those are pretty much the strongest. I'm starting to have a lot of new Scorpio friends, which I find interesting too.
And is that through, I'm curious if that's through work or not.
A little bit of both.
Okay.
But yeah, it's super interesting.
That's very interesting. And then me, you, and Josh did an interesting read. I was looking back at the files, and that was almost 2 years ago. It was mm-hmm. in March of 2018.
Yeah.
And I was thinking that you guys are one of my first couple chart readings that I've ever done.
One of the really cool things Camilla and I were able to do together was to do a couples chart reading with her and her husband. And at least the method that I used is what's called a composite chart. In case you've never heard of it before, it's basically where you take Camilla's chart, her husband's chart, his name is Josh, and you combine them into an entirely new chart. You basically mush the two together and find the midpoints. And the reason why this can be interesting is instead of just analyzing who is Camilla, who is Josh, what about analyzing them as a couple? Because each relationship has its own living, breathing energy that needs to be nurtured, that needs to be cared for, and that has its own special magic to it. This is why, in my opinion, there's no black and white answer to the question of, am I compatible with my partner? I think the better question to ask is, what do I need to do in order to make my partnership last? And that's where the composite chart can give us some direction in regards to what the couple may need.
Tell everyone to call you. And I have it on my desktop. We talk about it regularly.
What did you guys get out of it, out of curiosity? Like, what would you
say? First and foremost, I didn't realize that the couple has its own chart. Yeah. And when you explain that, I mean, one, it makes so much sense and is logical. Funny enough, I was saying to someone, I'm like, it's part astrology, but part couples therapy, because yeah. what you start to realize is the couple as its own entity. If you think about it that way, you can also think about nurturing your relationship in a much more directed way yes. versus like, I'm nourishing me, you're nourishing you, and yes. we just happen to sort of collide versus, yeah. hey, we're also creating a third thing that has to be nurtured itself.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. I mean, I think all the things you said to us were so insanely spot on and layered and nuanced. And again, I think, you know, Josh and I have a very, I think, socially different dynamic, and I think you really were able to pinpoint sort of the, okay, people perceive XYZ, but really it's something much more nuanced and different. Yeah. So I think for us that was really eye-opening and helped us also, again, feel sort of like, okay, mm-hmm. that's okay. You know, yes, someone can sort of perceive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you gave us good tips. I was saying to someone, you know, I've had a couple friends, and I was like, you really should do it, because it's not about, you know, people are like, well, I don't want to know if I'm a good fit or not. I'm like, it's not about whether you're a good fit.
No.
You are fitted by your choice.
Yeah.
So, like, you're choosing to fit. The question is, what's going to make that couple work. Stronger?
Yeah.
What's going to make it weaker? What's going to make it more challenging? What's going to make it more fulfilling? And yeah. I thought your advice on, you know, like, one of the things still resonated, you know, we're both very independent. Mm-hmm. And you said, look, that's not a good or bad thing. It just is. Mm-hmm. But the question is, what do you choose in your day-to-day to prioritize? If you know that, then you have to sort of have systems that bring you back together right. and help build that quality time when,
right.
yes, you can be madly in love with someone, but if you're too focused on the independent side,
right.
it's just going to be naturally hard to stay together.
Totally.
So things like that where it's not yeah. prescriptive, and it's not like in the future you're going to
yeah.
break up or whatever. You know, it's not predictive either. It's yeah. much more about the dynamics and sort of how do you hone it towards its best self.
Yeah. I always say to people, if you ever go to an astrologer who tells you you should break up with this person, you probably are at the wrong astrologer.
It happened to my parents actually right before they got married.
No way. The person gave them a black and white answer.
Well, my parents are very opposite, not dissimilarly to me and Josh.
Are they still together?
Oh, yeah. And they're madly in love, but, you know, my mom's like, I get why they would say that. And we left the session and your dad was like, I guess we're supposed to break up. And my mom was like, screw this person.
Yeah.
Totally. I think they were just talking. I agree. And I think people who make it prescriptive, it just shows to me a lack of tolerance for differences
totally.
Or unusual dynamics or reverse power dynamics, mm-hmm. whatever it is. And mm-hmm. to me, like, yeah, you may not be the vanilla simple version, but that doesn't make it good or bad.
Absolutely.
And you've obviously chosen it.
Exactly. That's what I always think all the time. And the other thing is, what do you want out of a partnership? Some people do want harmony. Some people do want to not grow. That's not a bad thing. They just want to chill with the person on the couch for the rest of their life. Yeah. And that's amazing. But I've met many couples, especially I think in this day and age, I've met more couples than not that are craving growth. And that is going to come with some butting heads along the way. And you can only get that through two charts that are technically like incompatible.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really exist.
The rising sign is commonly referred to as a mask, and while that definitely has an ounce of truth to it, I think it's a lot more deep than just a mask. However, the part that I do like about that is it would imply that at some point in our life we learned to put that mask on. It was not necessarily something that we were born with in our personality. And so you should look at your rising sign to begin to interpret the type of persona that you had to take on in order to survive in your family of origin. So to give some examples, you know, Cancer rising could have been nurturing in order to survive. A Pisces rising could have been empathetic in order to survive. A Aries rising probably learned to be autonomous in order to survive, and so on and so forth. Actually, I'll add maybe one more example. Leo rising learned how to be theatrical in order to survive. So in Camilla's case, we're going to unpack where her Capricorn rising story originated. And of course, like it would in anyone's chart, it originated very early on in life in the role that she played in her family of origin. So Capricorn rising can be incredibly, almost like insanely competent at a very young age. I always like to think of like 14 going on 40. In some cases, the parentified child of just taking on a role that's much larger and much more serious than maybe the typical temperament of a child. So we're going to see how this was true very early on in life, but the ways that it has benefited her in her adult life as well.
You're the youngest child, which really is curious to me because
I always say that I feel like the oldest.
Oh, I'm sure you do. Yes. And so I'm just wondering, like, in your family system, was there an advantage to being competent? Was there an expectation that you should be competent? Or was this just a Camilla, like, I was born this way part of your personality?
Probably the latter. So my mom tells me, and I was just sharing this, that, you know, when I was first born, I was already sleeping the night. I was very easygoing, that my mom actually told the night nurse, like, just don't come. Like, we'll still pay you, but please don't come. Because God forbid we, like, ruin the status quo. And she said, like, my dad was very hesitant to have a third child. You know, my parents are totally self-made, and he was very concerned. And my mom was like, I don't care, I want a third. So when I came along...
Concerned with the financial consequences.
Yeah,
of the third?
I mean, yeah. You know, he was like, hello. This is a lot.
It's a lot of money, yeah. It's a lot of college.
And my mom was like, great, I don't care. My mom comes from five kids, so she was like, three's already a compromise. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that it was an expectation. I think it was a hope, and I think my personality just was always like that. And I think, you know, my grandma lived with us growing up, you know, in a very full house. I shared a room with my brother most of my life, and probably a mix of both, I would say. And I think for me, it was sort of saying, okay, there's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. So if I'm complicated or difficult or, you know, attention seeking, I don't think I'm going to break through the noise anyway. So yeah. It's just sort of a waste of energy.
Yes.
So I kind of always, to me, just took the path of, okay, like if I can do it myself or I can take care of it myself, I just will. I tease my parents. I mean, they never would have known if I applied to college. Like they were just pretty hands off with me because
they just
it
knew
was
you
easy.
Were.
Yeah. And even now, sometimes I'll sit them down and be like, all right, I get it. I'm like easy and self-sufficient, but sometimes I do need coddling. And sometimes I would like you to, you know, baby me.
Oh my God, yeah.
But it's funny because people always say, again, sort of appearances versus reality. When people meet me and they hear I'm the youngest and the only girl, like, oh, you must be the spoiled princess. I'm like, trust me, I'm not.
No. I always say Capricorn rising is the self-made person. So, like, it's no matter if you grew up wealthy or not, whatever circumstances you grew up in, there's this sort of, like, I made my own destiny type vibe to a Capricorn rising.
And I definitely like to do things my own way and on my own and, you know, usually the road less traveled.
Yeah. And probably, like, to you, maybe a mark of honor is the fact that you have built everything that you've done by yourself. Is that true?
For sure. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I think everything takes a village and, you know, I'm a very communal person. Like, I wish I could live with all my friends on a commune, but yeah, I mean, I just think that sense of independence, I think, was just to sort of stabilize the family. And also for me, it actually felt easier than being more challenging as a child.
My therapist always says that kids are geniuses in the sense that they will figure out exactly what they need to do to survive. And in your case, it sounds like you decided the smartest way to survive in this family is to be competent, which is
for sure
amazing.
One of the best places to look for a heightened level of intuition, or you can call it psychic gifts or abilities, would be the planet Neptune. And it is a generational planet, so this is not specific to the individual. However, the placements and the aspects in the chart can tell a story of how much that planet is impacting the person's personality. And so in Camilla's case, she has this very dreamy, empathetic, psychic, and attuned planet Neptune in her first house of identity. So what that means for her is that not only does she have an intense ability to read other people, but other people might have a pretty hard time reading her. And since it's a generational planet, she's actually more a mirror to other people's identities and to their troubles and to their own projections than she is going to be seen on a realistic level. So not everyone sees Camilla clearly. They rather see their own projections of what they believe Camilla should be.
It's a generational planet. So it actually is a concept of you being a mirror to other people's stuff. It actually makes you, I don't know if you ever feel very psychic.
So Josh tells me I'm a good witch, and so is my mom.
I am a good witch.
I'm very witchy. I usually know when people are pregnant before they do or before they're telling anyone.
I can't believe you
I'm pretty
never
predictive
about
on
this.
Gender, which is really weird too.
Yes. Yeah. Good witch is actually the perfect way to describe it too, because Neptune is, like I said, this more ethereal planet, whereas Pluto is dark and it's maybe more classically witchy, if that makes sense. So I think a good witch is a perfect description.
My mom has it too. It's really weird.
And when did you notice that power, so to speak?
When I was a kid.
Really?
Yeah.
And so obviously beyond like recognizing if a woman's pregnant, what else do you see or pick up
on? I just always have very weird instincts about things. I'll always say to Josh, like, that doesn't add up, or, you know, someone's saying this, but something else is going on with them.
Yeah.
Just like really, and also always reading people. My mom, actually, yeah, my therapist, always says, I think that was also something that helped me, I mean, I guess, quote unquote, survive and thrive as a kid, was really being like always two steps ahead. Mm-hmm. And so I think I really am good at sort of feeling out and having a good instinct about people, what's going on with them, what's happening to them, really reading them, again, two steps ahead so that I can always be ahead.
Yes.
But to me, it's funny, I didn't think about it folding into Capricorn rising, but I think that fuels that. Like, if you want to be competent, then you have to know
to read.
Like, what, you know, the two chess game
plays
are before, you know, you make your strategy. So, and I think always a feeler too. I just always have had that, I don't know, just
have
always
you ever
have had those instincts.
Have you ever had, though, confusion in relationships? And what I mean by that is, like, have you ever had people misunderstand that power, feel threatened by that, and once they begin to pick up on it? Or, you know, have you ever had people project certain things onto you where it ends up in this weird?
Yeah. I mean, I think it goes hand in hand with Capricorn. I think in a lot of ways, when people don't feel confident and someone else shows competency, it makes them feel threatened, lesser than, and then they act out. Interestingly, I don't know if I shared, but so our baby was born the day I was about to switch OB doctors. I was interviewing the practice and I went into labor basically while they were doing intake.
Wow.
So I met them and delivered in the same day. But I actually switched OB practices for, ironically, a very similar reason. I had a lot of my own instincts and feelings. My son was breech, but I had a lot of my own instincts and feelings around, you know, how to get him to turn and what should be, and trying to do whatever we could to avoid a C-section. And it started really unraveling my doctor, and I've known her for 10 years.
Wow.
So she started really acting passive aggressive and saying sort of really inappropriate things. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. And Josh was like, your conviction and your feelings towards this are very much making her feel insecure. Yeah. And so she's acting out on you.
Yeah.
We just have to go with someone else. Like, this just isn't a good dynamic. Totally. And even if you end up with a C-section, you can't have someone with that energy around you while you're having surgery.
Absolutely.
So that was my most recent projection.
That is so fascinating. The thing that I find interesting about your chart is that I remember meeting you, and I remember upon first impression, your Capricorn rising is deceiving. Well, it's not deceiving because it's totally authentic, but you just seem above all else so smart and so functional. And I was just like, I remember specifically in the idea of you being a client, I was like, well, I just know she's going to tell me what she wants, and that's everything that a designer needs. You know what I mean? We just need someone who's straightforward. But then what I noticed as I was looking at your chart this morning is I was like, now that I've met you many more times, I so see that, where I was like, she's much more emotionally intelligent than was immediately perceptive to me. And that's that Neptunian energy is like, it's elusive. Upon first impression, the average Joe on the street's never going to know that about you. But especially someone like Josh, who's known you for so long and at such an intimate level, would see this very, very type of like intuitive or witchy energy that you have.
Well, it's interesting too that you say that, because I think also, not only in, I mean, I guess it speaks to what I was saying about like my parents, but Joshua says too, I think that the Capricorn rising does overshadow that. And so a lot of times when you are confident or you are self-sufficient, people tend to sometimes forget too. Like, you do have emotions and you do have needs.
Yes.
And you know, I always say, like, the healthy child shouldn't be overlooked, or like the easygoing child shouldn't be overlooked.
Yes.
It's sort of like, if one kid has the flu,
yeah,
you know, you're going to sit and obsess over them. And yeah. I think even in work dynamics, you know, sometimes people forget,
yeah,
hey, the person that's, I always, you know, we talk as a team, a lot of people like quote unquote punish the stars.
Yes.
So if you have a star employee, they're doing their own thing. They're running with a project. They're starting a new business line. Mm. You know, they're so great that a lot of times management then focuses only on the problem children. And 100%. They only think about, okay, that
squeaky
person that needs, exactly, yeah, they need all that attention. But really, you have to balance it out, because the star's not going to stay if, yeah, they feel like all the energy is going towards not the star.
Absolutely. There was that quote that was trending on Instagram a while ago that was like, check in on your strong friend. And I always think that's so true for Capricorn risings. I'm like, yeah, they seem fine, but no one's fine all the time.
So,
you know?
One of my best friends, she knows that I'm not very good at communicating when I'm going through something. I'll just kind of deal with it. And then later I'll be like, oh, I just had this horrible thing happen.
Right.
She's like, hello, I live 5 blocks away.
Call me.
What's wrong with you? Yeah. And I was like, I don't know. I just have to sort it out. And then I can sort of emotionally be in touch with it. And so we have a code. We call it turtle, and we send turtle emoji. She's like, you can send an emoji.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
And she's like, and it's called turtle, so you can say it out loud, you can say it on the phone, and no one knows what you're talking about. Only I do, so.
And even in times where you don't.
Turtle.
Yeah, that's amazing, because even when you don't have the words for it quite yet, you can just let her know we're going through something.
Exactly. She's like, you can send one emoji. Like, there's just no way you can say that that is too difficult. And because it's sort of code, then you don't really have to face it. And that's been a very successful approach.
Wow. I'm so glad. I was really curious if you were going to identify with this part of your chart, but I love that your mom and Josh know 100%.
I'm close friends too. And I think the people that I'm very close with at work too. I mean, I think the check-in on your strong friends is very true. And you know, I think my closest friends know. It's interesting that you asked, actually. I think my closest friends know, and I think people who aren't necessarily as close to me sometimes do feel offended.
Mm.
Like, oh, well, you're shut off, or, you know, you don't share, or you're fake,
yeah,
versus realizing that it's the Capricorn part that just sometimes overpowers and has to sort of sort it out, deal,
yeah,
and then I can sort of process the emotional side of it, just because...
Yes.
That's where I feel safer, I guess.
The rising sign explains, like, how do we go about our life? the rest of the chart explains who we actually are.
But it's interesting that for a lot of people, that's very unnerving and or negative. That when you're going through something that... Or, you know, the Neptune side is processing something, but it's not necessarily readily apparent. I think for some people, that's really hard.
Your involvement in the public can very much be indicated by the 11th house. The 11th house kind of encompasses our collective consciousness. How do you belong to something greater than yourself? Do you like to isolate or do you like to be part of a community of some kind? In Camilla's case, she has Pluto in there as well as Saturn. Pluto in particular for her makes a sextile to her Neptune and her ascendant in Capricorn, and it makes a sextile to her moon in Leo. This would imply Camilla can actually acquire a lot of power in communities. She can be a force of strength, of leadership, of inspiration to other people. And what I found as she describes Westbourne, her restaurant, but also her plans for it in the future, Camilla never thinks small. She never thinks just one-on-one. She tends to always think about the collective. So we're going to see how this strong Pluto in her chart plays out in her relationship with the world at large.
It's just always been something important to me. My parents are both very, very community-minded. You know, my dad's company is all geared towards life science and changing the future of human health. My mom has always been incredibly involved in local organizations. And I don't know, I just started realizing while working in hospitality for about a decade that, you know, there just wasn't like the Warby Parker Toms of food and beverage. So and yet when you really think about our lives, like that's mostly what we revolve around. You know, think about what decisions you make in your day. You make more choices about what you want to eat and drink than almost anything else. And
Yeah,
when you think about that and that no one was really doing it in a full circle strategic way. And I think for us, the most important thing is that it gives back to our local community and our neighbors, not just, you know, an organization abroad that no one's ever going to touch, feel, or meet. Something that, I don't know, just from the start was really important. I think a lot of that's just how it was raised and sort of the value system that my parents instilled in us.
Can you talk a little bit about what you just did with the, wasn't it childcare and hospitality?
Yeah. So about, it's crazy. It's so many people. Well, again, it's interesting that you were talking about Capricorn rising being a little bit of the red herring. My son is 3 weeks early being born. And actually, that was supposed to be the launch week for our partnership with Vivi, a childcare company that just launched in Soho in partnership with us. And so many people were like, oh, you totally nailed the timing. Like, this must have been strategic. And I, first of all, was pretty offended by that.
Yeah.
And ironically, it was in play, you know, it was in motion 18 months ago. Well before I was even thinking of conceiving. And so I just thought that was sort of funny that a lot of people thought it was strategic, which is sort of messed up. So about 18 months ago, what we started seeing was a lot of parents that worked for us just couldn't get to work, couldn't show up, did not have dependable childcare. You know, it was an uncle, an aunt, a parent, and then the parent would be sick and then they didn't have coverage. And, you know, we tried working with them and being flexible, but ultimately there's no 9-to-5 opportunity in hospitality. It doesn't matter whether you work in a coffee shop or a bar. I mean, frankly, even hospital workers have a very similar dynamic. Like those shifts just aren't traditional corporate hours.
Right.
And so we started doing a lot of research thinking, okay, one, you know, is it just our issue with our organization? The answer quickly became no. Everyone in our business has this problem. Two, and wanting to keep our people, people who are talented, who we want to grow and you know, our business revolves around that. People make food. People make beverage. People deliver hospitality. We're nothing without our teams. And so we realized that no matter if the organization was big, small, fine dining, casual, coffee, whatever, every single person said, yeah, we have that issue too, which was pretty alarming to realize there's a massive problem and no real solution. So we started really digging in and researching and thinking about whether there was a solution. And lo and behold, there wasn't. I mean, no childcare. You know, to them, there's enough people that don't have those strange hours or strange, you know, unusual needs. And so we ended up through the city connecting with Vivi, with Charles and Ben. And because they were a startup and really passionate, as we are, about sort of really reforming and reimagining what childcare could be. Mm-hmm. They were willing to collaborate on a program that targets, so it's high quality, accessible childcare near where people are being employed. I mean, most hospitality workers, there's a very high concentration downtown, 40,000 restaurants in New York City alone.
Wow.
On the island, and most workers don't live here.
Yeah.
They live outside of the city. So having childcare that's close to work, that's affordable,
game changer,
employer sponsored, high quality, and at hours that are, you know, accessible, it's a game changer. So
phenomenal. And our excited. And just for anyone who is unclear, when you say your employees, like what jobs are they doing? Because I think sometimes people might be like, anything. Oh, those are her corporate employees.
But anyone.
Okay.
Anyone can use it.
See, that's phenomenal.
And it's all, so we call it drop-in care. So it's essentially credits, and we as Westbourne bought the credits, and then any team member can use it. Doesn't matter how long you've worked with us, doesn't matter what your needs are. You can use as much or as little, and essentially you just call Vivi, and it can be as last minute as, hey, I want to pick up that evening shift.
Wow.
You know, I want to do that event. I can just drop my child off, walk to work. It's 4 blocks from us, and use the credit. So the whole idea is that it's super flexible, whereas, again, traditional childcare usually is not employer-sponsored. The person has to be, you know, dealing with all the logistics, and a lot of times it's not, you can't sort of just walk in and drop your child off. Yeah. You have to have usually more like a membership, you know, similar to, okay, I'm going to use it 5 days a week and I'm committing my child's there, you know, Monday through Thursday.
Right. Fascinating.
Which again, in restaurants, schedules change week by week.
Right.
Shifts open up,
yeah.
You know, events pop up. And again, it's really hard on a parent. You can't really grow in your career unless you do have maximum flexibility in this business.
Absolutely. I mean, I was a waitress all through my early 20s, but I didn't have anything to, no one to go home to, no one to be responsible for. So it was a perfect job. But my entire mom's side of the family, we were all waitresses. And so my mom was a latchkey kid because her mom was waitressing till, you know, some strange hour and wasn't able to afford.
Which is fine at a certain age, but yeah. You're talking about.
No, we're talking about.
Young kids. You can't really just do young. That. Think about it. You can't take advantage of last minute opportunities or things you want to do or,
yeah.
You know, an extra class or even meeting with, you know, your manager after work. I mean, there's just no flexibility unless there's someone to help you.
To go back to a little bit about the concept of politics in your chart, Pluto in the 11th doesn't tell a story of you literally being a politician. And if it did, it wouldn't be necessarily the president. It wouldn't be necessarily just a figurehead. Pluto in the 11th is more about making changes through power behind the scenes. So one of the things I've noticed about you is I think you're a fantastic networker, not in a phony way, literally just like really good at creating contacts and creating this community of people.
I think that speaks to why I love hospitality so much. And I think why that industry always pulled towards me is, you know, you can't do anything alone. And also people are everything. I think even when it comes exactly what you said with change, I mean, with Vivi, I mean, we never could have done it alone.
Yeah.
So many people said, oh, well, like, why didn't you start it? I go, do you know how regulated childcare is? Like, hospitality is heavily regulated. I could not go through the brain damage of figuring out another regulated business.
No.
Yeah. And I think the best things come from working with like-minded people, collaborating with others that are going to sort of push you to the next level. Mm-hmm. And I think 100%, I mean, everything in our business revolves around people.
Like, yeah.
I always tell our team too, you know, there's what's written in a contract, there's what's written on a website, but then there's also the person sitting next to you or across the table. Like,
yeah.
Ultimately, they're a human being that has emotions and needs,
yes,
and goals, and they're going to ultimately make the decision. It,
yeah,
doesn't necessarily matter what's, you know, on paper or what seems, you know, like the status quo. I mean, my team always laughs. They're like, you just never hear no. I'm like, yeah, you're right. I'm like, there's always someone who's willing to say yes.
You are a boundary pusher in your chart in a good way of sort of like this seems outdated. Can we rethink?
Jupiter is the gift or the luck in the chart. So depending on the sign that Jupiter falls into, it will tell a story of what type of behavior you should lean into to sort of accrue some of the luck or the good fortune that your chart has. So for example, I was born with a Jupiter in Libra. So the more balanced and fair that I am, the more that I'm able to see both sides of every story, the more the luck of my chart is able to see the light of day. Another example would be Jupiter in Aries. Fortune favors the autonomous. So go and do something on your own. Learn how to be self-reliant and self-sufficient. Another example would be Jupiter in Scorpio. Be authentic, be probing, be very self-aware, and do the hard work in getting to know your inner demons. And so in Camilla's case, given the year that she was born, her Jupiter in Aquarius would imply that fortune favors the person who does something innovative, different, but also humanitarian-minded. So we're going to see the different twists and turns that she's taken in her career and how those risks have actually really given her a lot of luck in her career thus far.
Have you seen in many iterations, because you've had so many iterations of your career, that the more boundaries you push, the more you seem to gain success?
Interestingly, it actually is what I always say was a little bit of a reluctant entrepreneur. I actually think that's what pushed me into doing my own thing. I have always been a boundary pusher, and I actually found in a lot of jobs, again, it sort of speaks to the, do people feel maybe a little threatened by Neptune? I always felt that it wasn't as welcomed when, you know, you're not a C-level or you're not the owner of the business. I do think most businesses require blind loyalty, complacency, and really following the rules, which I totally understand. And as a business owner, I get that impetus.
Yeah.
I come from a very different camp. I always tell my team, like, I want to know if something can be done better. I want to know if something doesn't work. I want to know if you don't like something. Everything's on the table all the time, which isn't... Well, and a lot of people don't want to work in an environment like that because it's ever-changing, and that also feels nerve-wracking to a lot of people.
True.
It's definitely a personality type.
Yeah.
I think I ended up really wanting to do my own thing because I found that that wasn't really encouraged or incentivized in other organizations that I worked in, you know, a mid-level management role.
Of course.
You know, again, I think when you're sort of lower on the totem pole, not to say the world changes when you're higher up, but I do think... it's not always rewarded when you work in other organizations. Mm-hmm. And I did find that that's sort of what I was constantly butting up against.
Mm-hmm. And did you have fears around how Westbourne was going to be different? You know, obviously it's a great idea, but it hadn't really been done before necessarily. Did you have hesitations or insecurities or fears at the launch?
I mean, look, everyone has fears of, oh, what if it doesn't work out? But I kind of have always, I think, in my life taken more of the approach of, whatever happens, I'm going to learn. Mm. So regardless of, look, it may totally not work, or like, hey, the original menu might be horrible. A lot of restaurants, I mean, there are a lot of amazing successful stories in hospitality where the first iteration no one liked, right, and we don't even remember, and most people wouldn't even know. I don't know. I just always feel like things can be changed. You know, the worst mistake is inaction in my mind. That's no matter what, you can always just take another step. There's always a card to be played, I guess is how I always feel. Yeah. So it doesn't mean there aren't bumps in the road. It doesn't mean that things go exactly as planned. I have a friend actually is just about to launch a business, and he asked me yesterday, like, I'm just really scared. Like, what if I make a mistake? And I go, you will.
Yeah.
Like, you have to get let go of the, I might make a mistake. Like,
just
you
presume.
Are going to. So, you know, I'm not trying to make you feel bad. Like, you're probably going to make some, you might make some small ones. You might make some really big ones. The key is, and I tell my team the same thing, just don't make the same mistake twice and fix it the second you realize it. Don't sit there. Don't hide it. Don't cover it up. Just bring it to the surface and we can figure it out. And even as, I would say the biggest thing I felt nervous about, I mean, I've never had anyone work for me before. I never had an intern. I was never on a team, which I always craved too, which I think is also why I wanted to do my own thing. I mean, at many prior jobs, I begged, like, can I have an intern? Can I have someone? Like, I don't actually like solitary work. I'm much more of a communal team person.
Yeah.
So I was nervous. You know, I'd never managed one person, let alone 30. And I thought, God, what if I'm like a horrible boss?
Aries, Aries, Aries. One of the biggest cliches of this sign is that it's the CEO or the entrepreneur. And to be honest, it's cliched for a reason. If you Google a lot of famous CEOs, they tend to be Aries or have some strong Aries placements in their chart. But I think the better way to frame it is a desire for autonomy, especially in our careers. What better way to not be managed than to create your own company? So I also could attribute that to being a freelancer or being a small business owner. It does not mean you have to be a big Fortune 500 CEO, but something where you don't have to be directly managed is pretty fantastic for the personality type of an Aries. So in Camilla's case, she has three personal planets in Aries. She, for all intents and purposes, is a good archetype of an Aries type personality. And more often than not, they don't necessarily foresee themselves being a business owner, but actually the drive comes from a place of not being managed very well. Due to the intensity and, you know, the creativity and the level of foresight that Aries have naturally, it's difficult to find mentorship at a young age, and it's really difficult for people to understand their power. And so more often than not, they end up starting companies because that's really their only option in regards to their personality type working in a career setting.
So again, maybe one of the in progress titles for your episode is the CEO, but having this many planets in Aries, I'm just curious, in personal planets, not just like generational planets. I'm just curious, like, did you always on some level know you were going to go out on your own? Because Aries pretty much notoriously doesn't want to work for other people.
I don't know. You know, my dad is an entrepreneur, but did so very late in life. I don't know. I think I share a lot in common with him in that way, because I do think there's part of me that one is, I'm risk neutral. I wouldn't say I'm like, I think I take calculated risk, but I think in my career, really, I was hoping that I would find that boss. I always say, like, I dreamed of someone sitting me down and being like, you're the bee's knees, you're the next generation. Yes, you have things to work on, but I want to be that person that gets you there. That just never happened. And I think being, I don't know that I always had that itch, but I did feel like I just never found in an organization exactly that mentorship I was looking for. Yeah. And I do think I worried that being out on my own also wouldn't give me that because there wasn't someone, you know, I think we're taught that mentorship comes from the top to the bottom.
Totally.
And I actually don't believe that anymore. I think we have it all wrong. I think you can get mentorship from your own team and from other people and from friends and people outside your business.
Yeah.
You know, even like when you read my chart, I learned so much. To me, that's a huge form of mentorship.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Piecemeal it from, you get a little bit from anyone that you might come in contact with.
Yeah. So I don't know that I think I always knew I'd go out on my own, but I do think I always knew I didn't conform in a lot of ways to a lot of the places that I was.
Can you tell us your career trajectory? Because it is fascinating.
It's very strange. I went to undergraduate business school for college. And then when I graduated, went to the French Culinary Institute, then got a JD MBA from NYU. During that time, helped develop and open River Park with Tom Colicchio. Moved back to LA where I'm from to work for a real estate private equity fund called CIM Group, specializing in all their hospitality projects. So mostly hotels and restaurants. Then came back to New York to be director of business development for Danny Meyer in Union Square Hospitality Group. And then spun off on my own to launch Westbourne.
It's so crazy.
Well, it's funny because people are always like, yeah, it's sort of what you said, interestingly. You know, yeah, it all makes sense. It, you know, it just had to have been. And so, every step, though, oh my God, it was like brutal to break doors down because my background was so unusual. And I think now we're in a generation and I think so many careers and options have opened and, you know, less traditional jobs and paths are more encouraged. But, you know, when I graduated, it was everyone went to, you know, get an MBA and go to banking. Everyone, for sure, you know, went to a consulting firm or like a big CPG brand. And anyone who didn't fit that, I mean, even my MBA program, career services told me day one, they're like, we just won't be able to help you. You're too unusual. I was like, oh, so glad I paid tuition. Awesome. It's like, at least lie to me and pretend that you're helping me. This is ridiculous. I won't donate a cent to them. Yeah. I only donate to the law school. Who actually were really kind. And they were like, you're a weird candidate, but we're here to help.
Yes.
So yeah, I mean, it all makes sense when you look back, but in the process, it was
And it had hard. To have been all of these change. You had to have been quick with these changes, right? Because you're still relatively young. I mean, very young to have lived this many lifetimes of a career.
Well, I always worked while I was in school, even, even in undergrad, worked pretty full time. Mm-hmm. I always like to work while I was in school because I knew I didn't, you know, I knew I didn't want to be a lawyer. So mm-hmm. for me, I had to do something while I was in law school mm-hmm. to round out my experience, but also, frankly, balance mm-hmm. my own brain and what I was interested in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think for me, it was always, you know, hit the ground running, learn as much as I can. And if I see an expiration date on something, try and find the next thing because I think you lose a little bit of yourself when you stay in the wrong job for too long. And I was always really afraid of that. My favorite, I did work in banking for all of 3 days. When I first graduated, I worked out a deal with a bank, said I could go to culinary school at night. And literally day one, I was like, no, this is not for me. So I called my dad and I was like, I'm quitting tomorrow. And he was like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, I'm just sorry. There may come a day where someone sucks my soul, but like that day is not today.
The moon tells a really deep story about the way that we nurture others and ourselves. So especially when a client is already a parent, it's really fun to go over what their moon and how it aspects other planets would imply about their parenting style and their relationship with their child. So in Camilla's case, she has her moon in Leo, but it makes a trine to her Neptune in Capricorn, it makes a sextile to her Pluto in Scorpio, and it makes a pretty strong square to her Saturn in Scorpio. So it tells a number of stories, the first of which is there's a certain heightened level of intuition and awareness as a mother, and that would be the trine to Neptune and the sextile to Pluto. There will be an awareness of the child's development and sort of the darker stages of teenagehood and all those very complicated years that we all go through. But then the moon square to Saturn tells a story of kind of being a tough or a disciplined or a realistic mother. Probably all of the above, by the way. And it can tell a story of a parent who, above all else, wants to make sure that their child is competent, self-sufficient, and they do not take parenting lightly. So very often when a person has their moon square to Saturn, they really thought about if they wanted to be a parent. It was not a given. It was something that they've spent a long while deciding if that was a path that they really wanted to follow.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I think it's one of the reasons I'm close to both my parents who are very, very different. I think when you're intuitive, you just get the other person, then it's easier to fit in. And you know, I always say to them, I feel like I individuated really early. Like I always tease my husband, I'm like, I don't even remember when that happened, which means it happened a very long time ago. Like I sat my parents down when I was 18, and I'm like, look, we're now friends. So the choice is we either choose to really enjoy each other, to build a relationship, to stay close, because I don't have to be here anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't live in this house. I don't have to spend time. I don't have to come home. So now we have to make this a real choice together. Mm-hmm. My dad was like, are you kidding me? Like, who talks to their parents like this? And even now, I remind them.
To I'm be like, honest, I'm blown.
I know. It's a very... I look back, I'm like, man,
they but messed so up. Really.
Well, I said it's just you get to that point. So I think... I don't think I had fear... I didn't always know I wanted to be a mom. Mm. I've always been very maternal. Mm-hmm. I take care of everyone in my family. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm the responsible, the doer. Like, I always arrange everything. Yeah. And even amongst my friends, I play that role. But I don't know. I think because I'm the competent one and I'm the younger one, you know, I didn't grow up around babies. I wasn't, like, taking care of a sibling. So I think that element was... I think a little bit scary to me. Like when I first met Josh, especially because we met very young, I told him, look, I don't know that I want kids and I really don't want to be pressured. I mean, we're the first married, we've been married 10 years and we're the last to have kids.
Oh, that's crazy.
But I said to him, I don't want to have children until I really am ready. And I feel like I know I definitely want to have kids because I think a lot of people have kids for the wrong reasons. And I don't think I was waiting like to have it be, you know, this perfect time. I don't believe in that. I think that, you know, there's no perfect time to do anything, but I did feel, again, that intuition that I would have to, you know, I would have to feel like it was the right time.
Yeah.
So I think for me, the, it's weird because I was thinking about this yesterday. And you asked me when you walked in, like, what's his personality?
Yeah.
I'm excited about that, that I do have that read and to help my own child trust their instincts. I think that's really important.
Yes.
And I think that's what I hope to provide as a mom, is for them to feel like they have a good compass internally, and whatever, you know, whatever their instincts are, to trust that, to feel that, to honor those. I know I always tell Josh I think I'm going to be bad cop, but I'm not thrilled to that.
I'm going to be bad cop too, but there's a strength to this in the sense that, just like you were describing with your brother, there's so much love there. There's not a lack of, so it'll be a warm sense of discipline.
No, I think that's for sure true. And I think part of that also comes from probably, again, hating to go back to the Capricorn rising, maybe a little bit of the Aries. Like, with my niece, I would always say to her, look, like, that doesn't work for me. Like, if she would do something that annoys me, I'm like, look, I'm not a, like, put myself. Well, I think part of that is I don't put myself aside. I don't want to be the mom that puts themselves aside. And I don't want to be the spouse that does that either. Like I said, if I like something, I'm all in. If I don't, I'm out. And I won't do something and feel guilty later. I won't do something and be angry later. I won't do something and complain. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm in, I'm in. If I'm not, I just won't do it. And I'll explain why. Mm-hmm. To me, I feel like a lot of moms fall into that trap of, you know, that self-sacrifice and that martyr, or, you know, bending to their kids because they feel like they should. And I always say to my niece, like, I just can't. Like, this is not me. And I get it. It may make me like a horrible aunt or insensitive, but like, let's work something out. And she would always laugh too. Like, she would not fall asleep. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. I don't have children. I've never done this. Like, how do I put you to bed? And she'd be like, oh, you read to me. I'm like, why didn't you tell me that an hour ago? She's like, well, you didn't ask. I'm like, okay, great. So I do think, and I think that logical side in dealing with emotion, sort of to what you were earlier talking about, I always say, like, I'm not a good friend for someone who's really sensitive. Yeah. Like, it's just not my, tell me what you want. I will make it happen. I'm not good at reading between the lines. I'm in tune, but I have a hard time. I have a hard time with those sort of emotional games. Mm-hmm. I have a much harder time with sort of unwielded emotions for no reason. Mm-hmm. That just, it's very hard for me. Yeah. My, you know, my therapist is always like, yeah, you're making that logical. Like, it's not. I'm like, but it is.
Moon square Saturn.
In Camilla's chart's case, but also just in her story, it's not a huge question as to what she was meant to do. She's already accomplished a lot. It's very clear that she's going to be a very successful entrepreneur. But it is really fun to have the client sort of probe themselves as to what they think their greater purpose is. So just like any episode, I'm going to end by asking Camilla, what does she think she was made for, given all of these planets and these aspects and the houses that they show up in? What does she think she was uniquely put on this earth for?
I think what I was made for, and it's funny you said it's how I feel now, but not necessarily my North Node, but I don't know. I think for me, it's always about how do I make the most of each day and how do I get the most enjoyment out of every choice, every relationship. You know, in the Enneagram, I'm the enthusiast, which is funny because a lot of my closest friends, we had a lot of arguments about which number I was. And I always said to them, again, I know there's perceptions about, you know, what brings me joy, but what really brings me joy is making joy out of the small and big things. And I think that for me, that's definitely, I enjoy the process. I enjoy the journey. I'm made for, again, probably why I enjoy being an entrepreneur. And I agree with you. It's not about the destination for me. I'm much more made for sort of the thrill of the ride and how do I make each day sort of the most fun, you know, the most fun, the most fulfilling. And I never, my mom always raised us and she said, you know, her parents died very young. She always said, never put off for tomorrow what you could do today. So again, I think definitely that joy of really maximizing whatever I can in every single day.
You know why it is your North Node? Is the fifth house is a house of children and joy and creativity. So you use the word joy, which I find fascinating.
For sure.
I don't think I can end on a higher note. I think that's where we're going to end. Thank you so, so, so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to What Time Was I Born? If you want to find me online in the interwebs and the crazy Instagram world, you can find me at NadineJane_astrology or on my website, www.NadineJaneAstrology.com.